In the Great Hall of the Justice League, there are assembled the world's four greatest heroes, created from the cosmic legends of the universe. Superman. Wonder Woman. Batman. Aquaman. And those three junior super friends, Wendy, Marvin, and Wonder Dog. Their mission, to fight injustice, to right that which is wrong, and to serve all mankind.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of For All Mankind, a Super Friends podcast. For All Mankind is a read-through show covering DC Comics' classic Super Friends series, which ran from 47 issues from 1976 to 1981. Proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, Rob Kelly. And joining me this episode is my super friend, David Gallagher. Hi, David.
Hi, Rob. Thank you so much for having me. It's a great pleasure to be here.
Thank you for doing the show. This is the first time you and I have actually podcasted together, which is very exciting.
I'm super excited. I think we will be nice to eventually get neck and neck with Shag.
I don't exactly know what that means, but I like it. Whatever it means, I like it.
Man, I've done a lot of shows with Shag, and I've done a couple shows with Siskoid, but we need to bank them up, Rob.
Absolutely. I agree with that. Yeah, Shag's been keeping me off of JLI as best he can. And so I feel like I have to start poaching some of his guests on some of my shows just to get back at him. So, yeah, I'm all aboard with that.
Let's do it.
All right. So we're here to talk about Super Friends number 5. The story is called Telethon Treachery. It's by E. Nelson Bridwell, Ramona Fraiden, and Bob Smith. It was on sale March 24th, 1977. But before we get to the comic book in question, David, I have to ask you, what is your history with the Super Friends concept and then the Super Friends comic in specific?
Well, I was raised with a television for the first couple of formative years of my life. I was born in Hawaii and lived on an army base, and we moved around a lot. When we finally got a TV, was right around the time that Wonder Woman had a show, Batman, Adam West was in repeats, the George Reeves TV show, Superman show was like rebroadcast, and I think it was because of a box of Alphabet's cereal that my mom bought in like 1980 that had iron-on patches where it would say like, watch the Super Friends, Saturday on ABC, is when I really got into the show. So I want to say it was 1981 was when I really got into the show. And then we had moved to Rockville and it was on weekdays and broadcast like on whatever the modern version of UPN was.
Right.
It broadcast all the time. And, I just fell in love with it. And so there was a lot to love about the show. It wasn't just it was Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, and Aquaman. It was also like sort of the crazy, zany concepts that they would come up with.
Mm-hmm.
I have a favorite season of the show, which is the world's greatest Super Friends. That to me is the most surreal of all the seasons, where they're battling like hobbits.
And oh, right! It's all fantasy stuff.
It's
right?
All fantasy literature with one episode being where Lex Luthor like brings people from the sun to take over the earth.
Sure. Okay.
All those fire creatures like start melting everything they touch. It's like Lex Luthor strikes again, I think. But man, I love that. That season is one of the biggest influences of the work that I do as a children's book and graphic novelist, because it's so zany. It's able to take, it's able to create menace, with like skeletal pirates and weird robo monsters and things coming out of lava, which are all really scary to you when you're like 5 years old. And mm-hmm. I was so fascinated by the opening credits. And as I became a fan, my parents got me a Super Friends, How to Draw the Super Friends, like how to draw a book that had Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, and then how to draw like the Batmobile and stuff like that. And, that became the template for how I learned how to draw. how to break things into shape. So I want to say I was like 7, and I just was obsessed with that book. I would bring it with me to elementary school, like a little blue cover. And then the Super Friends just became such a huge part of what I think about in terms of like the core DC concept. I mean, later it blew up into like the superpowers action figures and whatever. They're a huge part of what I think about when I think about DC Comics, you know. And to this day, what's really interesting is you can see the echoes of the Super Friends in things like Supergirl. And even when I wrote Green Lantern for a couple of issues, like I made nods to the Super Friends, you know, and that was really fun, or the Legion of Doom or whatever. So I think it's really influential for 2 to 3 generations of people who are reading comics today. But I also think, you know, there's something really sweet about the concept in a way that is not mired by more adult themes. It's just very pure, unabashedly fun superhero stuff without like people stabbing each other or temperament or limb amputation. It's just like every character has a role and everybody works together to solve a problem. And that to me is what's really interesting. And that's one of the things that really appealed to me. I only had a couple of issues of the Super Friends before then it became like the Superpowers. My parents got me a couple issues of Super Friends at the grocery store, and then eventually it folded into or weirdly became Jack Kirby's Superpowers.
Yeah, all those Superpowers miniseries in the early 80s, yeah.
But, you know, I have a lot of fun memories of it. And while I didn't necessarily get this issue off the stand when it first came out, because I was like 1,
right.
It eventually added to my collection just a couple years ago. And one of the things I love about it are all the deep cuts, which I think we'll get to when we when we start talking about the issue.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, so if you didn't discover the cartoon until 1981, by then the comic book series was almost on its way out by that point. I mean, the comic book only lasted a little bit into, like, I think late 1981 or maybe very early 1982. But, yeah, it was in its last year by the time you would have even discovered the cartoon. So the comic book probably wasn't even available to you in any real way because of newsstand distribution. Once it was gone, it was gone.
Right. So occasionally you get them at flea markets, which is how I, you know, a lot of the comics that my dad got me would end up getting, like, or garage sales or yard sales. But, you know, really, really ragtag kind
of. Right. Yeah.
I love the series, and I think that it's there's something about it that is so, it sort of leans into DC lore in a fun way, but without being too mired in it. And that's something I think is that I've really come to appreciate about it.
Absolutely. So, yeah, all right. Well, then let's get right to it. As I said, this is Super Friends number 5. The story is called Telethon Treachery. It's, of course, by E. Nelson Bridwell, Mona Freyden, and Bob Smith. It was on sale March 24th, 1977. Before we get to the story, though, David, I'm going to ask you, what do you think of the cover? You've got this unnamed villain who's got a dollar sign on his chest and a dollar signed gun shooting coins at Batman and Aquaman with Superman and Wonder Woman on the television in the background. It's kind of unusual in that Aquaman is taking the center stage for once. This is basically the first cover where he's not either entirely missing or at least kind of like way off in the background. So I have to think that's partly Ramona Freyden because she, of course, did the Aquaman strip for many years. But what do you think of this as a cover image?
I actually think it works really well. It's a shame to see Wendy, who is one of my favorites, already passed out.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the I really love the juxtaposition between Superman saying, "Let's keep those charity dollars rolling in to the Super Friends," and literally the villain literally rolling them in to the Super Friends by chucking them at them with his Gatling gun coin thing.
Pelting them in the head with coins. And he's knocking Batman out too. And you see Wonder Dog off in the corner watching all this happen. Because, of course, it's a recurring motif in the Super Friends comic is that the villain always ignores Wonder Dog. That becomes a thing. And then, of course, Wonder Dog becomes instrumental in saving the day because he's just a dog. Nobody bothers to pay attention to him, even though he's got a cape.
Yeah, and he can fly, right?
No, Wonder Dog cannot fly.
Oh, Marvin can fly.
No, Marvin cannot fly.
Marvin can fly. He flies in the very first episode of the Super Friends.
He does, well, maybe, but he can't fly in the comic book. Certainly, they have no powers in the comic book.
Drat. Yeah, in the very first episode we see him, he's arm wrestling, or cartoon we see him in, He's arm wrestling Superman and then runs up into the sky to levitate away.
Really?
Yeah, man.
I have to go back and revisit that. I have no memory of that. Okay, well, that's
the... It's, I have the DC Universe app where they stream all of these. Yeah.
Oh, but my goodness. I have no memory of that. All right, we got to check that out sometime.
It's so limited, and people are like, he may have flight because he literally is floating in the sky. So I think that's a power he is practicing in that particular first episode, which I think is like Professor Baffle's puzzle. If I'm correct, it may be, I think it's Professor Baffles. My super friend's lore is failing me, but I will remember in a minute.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to go back to that. So, okay. Anyway, the story, as I said, it's called Telethon Treachery, and it starts with the super friends are holding a 25-hour telethon for the United Charities. Watching this on TV is a masked villain named Greenback, who tells his henchmen that his plan is to wait until the biggest, richest guests appear in the telethon. He will then kidnap them, holding them for ransom. After some donations come in from business tycoons, Batman excuses himself from the telethon and hops into his Batcopter, landing atop Wayne Foundation building. As Bruce Wayne, he then calls in and makes a donation even bigger than the ones made by his fellow tycoons. Then Bruce and Alfred sit down to watch the show. Suddenly, they hear a helicopter land on the roof of the building. In it is Greenback and his armed goons, who try and kidnap Bruce Wayne. After tossing one of the goons into the pool, the other knocks Wayne out with the butt of his gun. Alfred then calls into the telethon to tell the super friends that Bruce Wayne has been kidnapped. Unbeknownst to Greenback, Bruce Wayne activates the signal device in his utility belt, and the super friends pick up the signal. Robin, Aquaman, and Wendy and Marvin jump into the Batmobile to find him. The trail leads to a deserted mansion, and the Sea King easily smashes his way in, and our heroes take care of the henchmen. Greenback then fires a dollar sign shaped gun, firing change at the heads of Aquaman and Robin, knocking them out. Greenback then grabs Wendy and Marvin, chaining them all up in the mansion's basement. He's rigged it that if Aquaman pulls himself loose, which he could easily do, he will bring the entire house crashing down upon him and the others. Wonder Dog arrives, having hidden from Greenback and his men. Wendy writes a note and gives it to him to deliver to Superman and Wonder Woman. The Man of Steel drops Wonder Woman off, and she breaks into the basement. At lightning speed, she frees the Super Friends and then uses her enormous strength to keep the house from collapsing long enough for Robin, Wendy, and Marvin to escape unharmed. Superman finds Greenback's second hideout and smashes his way in. Within moments, he has knocked out Greenback's men and freed Bruce, who quickly changes into Batman. The Dark Knight detective catches up to Greenback, who is moving slowly because he's carrying heavy bags of money. Batman catches up to him, and the one punch ends the fight. Back at the telethon, the Super Friends assemble to announce they have taken in a record amount of money for the charity. All right, David, what did you think of this story?
I loved it. I loved it because it blends sort of a little bit of the Adam West TV show with the Super Friends while still being really light and fun. Like it felt like a slightly lighter version of a Justice League comic I might have read as a kid. Like it was just this side of I want to say campy, but it was just this side of lighthearted enough. But it still felt like it could have fit in with the Perez Michelinie or Jerry Conway Justice League comics.
It's interesting. Yeah, I mean, it mentions in right at the top, it's called the JLA Superthon, which is interesting because we actually don't ever see any of the other members of the Justice League. We do see guests at this telethon, but none of them. It's not Flash, it's not Green Lantern, it's not Hawkman. E. Nelson Bridwell loved to kind of like dip in and out of the Super Friends as being part of the Justice League, as sort of a subset of the Justice League, but it was sort of a little strange to me that we actually don't see any of the other heroes, even though some of them are mentioned.
Yeah, we get Zatanna mentioned, like, I think on the second page.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, for some reason we don't. And we get these other versions. There's like a comedian named Larry Davis, and later on there's a singer who we'll mention. There's another magician. But it's all these sort of telethon-like acts. Like, Charo doesn't show up, but she could have, because it's that kind of – it's that sort of Jerry Lewis telethon thing.
Right. It reminded me a little bit of – though not as blatantly bad – as the roast and challenge of the Super Friend.
Oh boy. Yeah.
It's not like that. This feels very good hearted, you know?
Yeah.
And the way that they were able to bring in Bruce Wayne, I thought was really important because it helped highlight that So let's get to, I think, the first page. What did you think of this splash page?
Oh, it's fun. I mean, Greenback's costume is kind of eh.
Like the, oh, I love it.
Big dollar sign on his back and a dollar sign belt and the green. I mean, it's as hokey as it gets. And, it's a very classic splash page because Greenback is already setting up the stakes where he's like, I'll collect the money. I mean, it is very Adam West Batman kind of thing. And, in fact, you mentioned later on when Bruce Wayne shows up, he's got the purple, smoking jacket and the ascot. You totally could see Adam West dressed like that on the show.
And that's exactly it. I like this because the splash page sets up everything you need.
Yep.
Like we know who the bad guy is. We know that he's bad. One of the things that is interesting is as an adult, I was always confused why bags of money never had like little money symbols on them.
Mm-hmm.
So this really leans into that. Like, I'm a bad guy, see? So I have money on my back. That's what I want. I love that sort of goofiness about it. So when we get – and it's telethon treachery, but it sets up everything you need to know. You know that he is going to rob – I mean, he's going to rob the telethon, or he wants to rob the telethon. And I think that that's perfect. It sets up exactly what the villain's motivations are literally on the first page.
I am a little disappointed that his goons, who we see on page two – aren't in costume. Like, they're just guys in suits. I wish they had been, you know, like a dollar, like different denominations or something. That would have been fun. Like, one of them's a one, a five, a ten, or something like that. I wish that maybe Ramon Afraid missed a bet there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and they seem, the way that the sort of their silhouette seems like very dopey. Then what are we waiting for, Greenback? Yeah, boss.
You know, yeah.
Kind of like, you ain't told us your scheme yet. You know, they don't seem like really fleshed out, but they could be. I mean, imagine having, just a leaning in a little bit more to that level of like campiness would have been kind of fun. But mm-hmm. We're on the second page and already we get like sort of a, in that first panel, we get sort of an interesting deep cut, like, in alphabetical order, the names of the people who have donated are like Daphne Dean, Scott Free, Janine Gale, Kathy Kane, Steve Lombard, Dexter Miles. But of all those names, the one that immediately struck out to me was Larry Davis, when I first read it, I was like, Larry David? How long has he been? Seinfeld been involved. But Larry Davis is actually the alter ego of Funny Man, which is a character that Siegel and Schuster created.
Right, right. Wow, that's – oh, my God. That is a deep cut.
And so when we get to the – I mean, we'll get to it a little bit more later. But, I mean, so he's like a good guy version of the Joker. But to have that come in, it's sort of like, oh, yeah, I see what you're doing here. And I've, you know, we have Wilford Pennyworth, not Alfred, but, you know, a relative. You know, we have Linda Turner and Zatanna the Magician. Like, here are all the people who are contributing, and that sort of makes it feel like a very inclusive, kind of Easter egg / wink and nudge at the way the Super Friends are part of this larger tapestry.
Speaking of a wink and a nudge, on page three, you've got Batman taking calls, and he takes a call from a Mr. Stark who wants to arrange a contribution to the Heart Fund. And you're like, oh, okay. And then on the very next panel, we see Superman announce that the $75,000 has been pledged by Anthony Stark. So
yeah.
Tony Stark is a fellow business tycoon that Bruce Wayne is friends with. So I thought, that's a kind of a nice deep cut that we're going all the way across the street to Marvel Comics to have a sort of subtle cameo of a Marvel character. I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting because on that same page right at the top, it's like, and now for our biggest guest comedian, Larry Davis. And then they say, a pleasure to meet you, Superman. I've wanted to meet you for years. I understand we have a couple of mutual friends. Those mutual friends being Siegel and Schuster.
Siegel and Schuster.
Right. And then on the next one, Larry Davis is making a joke. And then Superman says, yes, he's a very funny man.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a nice little, really, again, a really deep cut. So We have Funny Man. We have Iron Man. I love that, you know, the contribution goes to the Heart Fund. Mm-hmm. You know, like, there's a lot of, like, and then Greenback's like, curse, another New Yorker has pledged. I was like, yeah, man, that's right. Where are the fat cats from Gotham City and Metropolis?
Yeah, I just thought that was great. I just thought that was really very funny. I love the idea that Bruce Wayne and Tony Stark are business rivals, are friendly business rivals. That's just, I just love that. I think that's great. And on the same page, we get an appearance by, like, the Bat Whirly Gig Copter, you know? I mean, I love all that little, the Whirly Bat, as it's called. I love that. I love that they work that in. Like, instead of just having Batman, you know, jump in the Batmobile and drive to Wayne Foundation, he actually is in the Whirly Bat, which is always one of my favorite vehicles because it's so just strange looking. This little one-seated copter, it doesn't look terribly airworthy, but, you know, hey, it's better.
It's safe.
No, right. It doesn't. Yeah, I would not want to fly in that thing. And they even made a toy out of that, too, which was amazing.
Yeah, they did. It's so bizarre. I love Wendy giving Batman sort of the wink and the nudge, mm-hmm. because Batman was trained by Wendy's uncle.
Right, as explained in the text pieces of the previous issues, yeah.
Right. And so it's very clear to me, at least from her wink and her nudge, where he's like, Wendy, you have to fill in for me. I have a little business to transact. And she's like, I get you, Batman. Man, she's the best.
She is. So then like I said, we get a magician act. We see that on stage again. It's not Zatanna. It's strange. They talk about Zatanna is going to be there, but instead this is Carlo Dorenzi, the famous stage musician, and he throws this disappearing girl act where she disappears under a blanket and then appears in a giant ball of yarn. And in a very sort of Penn and Teller way that we even find out how they do the trick. They reveal how the trick is done, which I thought was very, you know, very pulling the curtain, literally pulling the curtain away of explaining the trick to, like, little kids. I thought that was kind of fun.
Twins the whole time. Mm-hmm. And it's Batman who ruins it.
Yes, that's right. I know both of them. Oh, I bet you do, Bruce. So
it's like, yeah. Aha. But it's interesting because as I read this, and some of these winks and nods are totally going to go, like, over my head, but I wonder, like, how many of these people are people that the creative team knew?
Right. Yeah, I know. I'm not familiar with some of these names and stuff. So, yeah, maybe they are just friends of E. Nelson Bridwell or the DC staff or something like that.
And also, I love that Bruce's contribution was $25,000 more than Tony Stark.
Of course. Of course. He's got to outdo Tony Stark.
Right now.
Mm-hmm. I love the scene where the henchmen show up on the Wayne Foundation building and one of them attacks Bruce Wayne and he easily just hurls the guy into the pool in a move that, of course, Bruce Wayne would not really be able to do. But it reminded me a lot of the Batman movie, the 1966 movie, where where we get that really kind of great action scene with Adam West as Bruce Wayne being able to beat the crap out of guys because, of course, he's just worried. He just wants to not be kidnapped. And he sort of forgets himself that as a millionaire playboy, he should not be this good at hand-to-hand combat. But here he is. And I love that a lot. I think that's a fun trick that the – because even the one henchman's like, hey, you know, he's not expecting Fat Cat Bruce Wayne to be able to handle himself like that.
Yeah, and then we get an appearance. I mean, we get it earlier, but we've never got until later seasons of the Super Friends cartoon, we never got an appearance of Alfred.
No.
So right. To get I don't think he shows up until, like, the last season. So to get Alfred's appearance here is really, really nice.
Yeah, I like that. And then so later on, so we go back to the telethon, and the Super Friends are like, there's the Aquaman and Robin and Wendy and Marvin are like, okay, we'll rescue Batman, and they get in the Batmobile and drive in. And this is probably my favorite sequence in the book because it is Aquaman sort of relaying about how strong he is. Even Robin says, if they'd seen his chances, or they've started shooting by now, but won't you be a little like fish out of water? And Aquaman's like, a little maybe, but living under pressures at great depths, I build up my muscles till I can outpunch most surface men. And so I love it's a bunch of panels of Aquaman just kicking ass, which I just love. I mean, Aquaman doesn't get to do that very much.
He takes out that door, man, and then Robin goes for those guys' legs. So we're seeing like some really smart, clever moves on their part in terms of just taking people out.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Aquaman throws one guy into two other guys. I love all that. I just think that's great that Aquaman gets something to do. Now, of course, they get taken out very quickly by the dollar sign gun with the coins being hit at you, which, you know, in the grand scheme of things is probably not that bad. But nevertheless, I wouldn't want to get hit with like a collar shot, a quarter shot at me with like an air gun. That would really hurt.
Yeah, air guns, let's keep in mind, air guns hurt.
Yeah.
And I like the idea that, in my mind, it moves kind of like at the speed of a rail gun.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were to do like this DC, Siskoid and Shag aren't here, but if we were to talk about it, like maybe they just failed their saves and didn't spend the hero points to not pass.
Yeah, I mean, you got to take them out somehow. I mean, I would say I don't think Aquaman could get knocked out by a quarter in the head, no matter how hard it was hit at him. But it's all right. You got to move the plot along. And then, of course, we've got this great death trap where they're all under the basement. And I like that, again, that it's like, well, Aquaman, you could easily break out of this. But if you do, you're going to bring the mansion come pouring down on the three people who don't have superpowers, Wendy, Marvin's ability to fly notwithstanding, which I like a lot. I like that it's like Aquaman using his own strength against them as opposed to saying, well, you're too weak to free yourself. It's like, no, he could easily free himself, but he doesn't want to harm the other super friends, which I think is great. And that's the moment where Wonder Dog comes into it because they conveniently chain Marvin, Robin, and Aquaman by their wrists, but Wendy by her waist. So that leaves her hands free. And she says, she talks about that she has she always carries a pencil and paper, which is very smart.
Yeah, it really is. Look, I don't think Wendy Harris gets enough credit for being so awesome. So I'm just a member of the Wendy Harris fan club, and I think she does a really great job consistently being smart. Smarter, definitely smarter than Marvin. Maybe
yes.
On par occasionally with Robin, who is really in the cartoon very condescending to her. You know, like if you watch the cartoon, especially the first season, you're like, wow, Robin, you're just like totally ignore Wendy, even though she's like so smart consistently. So I love what she does here. You know, I think it's really smart. I think she's very clever. And again, yeah, I love that they lean in and really focus on the impact that Aquaman could have on the story.
Yeah, I think that's terrific. When Superman and Wonder Woman come to rescue them, they do get into the bit where Aquaman is weakened because he hasn't gone without water for an hour. That is always one of my least favorite weaknesses they ever gave the character, and I'm very glad that in the mid-80s they got rid of it because it's just too limiting. But, of course, it gives Wonder Woman a chance to smash in, break everybody free, and she even rescues Aquaman in that way by sticking the wood plank into the dirt so far that it hits like a stream of water which shoots up and refreshes Aquaman. So, and then she frees all the other heroes and then literally just shoulders the entire building falling on her. And there's a really great panel by Ramona Freyden. It's a back shot of Wonder Woman mostly completely in silhouette holding up the whole house as everybody runs out. It's a really nice panel.
Yeah, I think that there are a couple places where on page 11 and early on 12 where Wonder Dog looks a little off model.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I love I absolutely love watching Wonder Woman take charge here, you know? And I think that I love that there's a song that is being sung about Wonder Woman as she's doing this.
And it's being sung by Jeanine Gale, the singer who appeared in the previous issue of Super Friends, which sang the sort of the faux Midnight at the Oasis song from the previous issue that it was her concert that Skyrocket was stealing from. So that's – I like that little bit of issue-to-issue continuity that there's this famous pop singer in the previous issue, and now she's here at the telethon. I think that's a nice little addition by ENB.
She's the woman who is every woman's sister, and she wins out every time.
Yep. That's good stuff. I like this Jeanine Gale.
I know. Yeah. The lyric – she will cure the painful blister that is known to us as crime. It's gilding the lily a little bit.
I love that the scene is set to music, though. That's a very fun thing. And then it happens again on the second, the next page where Superman and Wonder Dog break in. And again, Jeanine Gale singing another song. This time it's called He's Superman. and it's got out of the sky comes muscular being heroic with costume red, yellow, and blue. The criminal element turns and is fleeing for all fear and powerful great you-know-who. And this is a moment where Superman really gets to cut loose. He smashes into the wall. He beats up a bunch of the goons, and then of course there's a panel where they all fire at him, and the bullets are all bouncing off. And so, you know, generally in these Super Friends comics, Superman doesn't get to be full on Superman because they have to kind of keep it a little mellower for kids. But here he kind of gets just to be the George Reeves Superman and just smash stuff, which is fun.
So two things I want to say. One, you're a Power Records fan.
Absolutely.
So this part of this reminds me of where Superman melts the gun out of the guy's hand reminds me of, what is it, Tomorrow the World, where Superman melts Lex Luthor's
mask as he's wearing it, yeah.
Yeah, so that same level of, like, this is not a Superman that's messing around.
Yeah, I like it a lot. It's great. And then the guy's got his hand, he's like that. And then I love when Superman frees Bruce Wayne with the ropes, just by smacking the ropes, which is fun. I love that.
Awesome. So how great would it be? And I know he probably loves it when I'm going to volunteer him to sing stuff, but how amazing would these songs be with Luke Dobb?
You know, Luke, if you're listening, you might want to give these a try. I know you're stuck in quarantine like the rest of us, so, and I know you're knocking out songs. Maybe you want to give it a shot. I think that's a good suggestion, David. I like it a lot.
So, but then, yeah, so Bruce Wayne puts on his, he has part of his Batman attire and his cape and cowl right there. Brought to him by Superman because he had a pouch basically in his cape.
Superman, the pouch in Superman's cape is like the TARDIS. It's just way bigger than you could possibly imagine because he could pull all sorts of stuff out of it. And you're like, wait a minute, it's just a pocket. I mean, how big of a pouch is this thing?
Right. So, but I do love I do love how we get to see Batman again in. This is the part that really reminds me of the kind of Adam West, especially with that uppercut, you know, like where it feels like very fluid and kind of great to see this awesome fight scene. I do wish that Greenback had a little bit more to give when we bring the story to a conclusion.
But right, yeah.
Because literally he just punches him out and then there's a panel that ends the story.
I love the idea that the villain can't get away fast because bags of money are heavy. That's a funny thing you never see in any other sort of comic book story. The Joker, the Riddler, they're always running with these giant bags of gold. And it's like, you ever try to carry anything like that? It's really heavy. So I like that little bit of verisimilitude that Greenback just can't get away fast because money's really heavy. I mean, one of the bags seems to have nothing but paper money, which how heavy could that be? The other bag must have coins or something. But I just think it's funny. I like the idea that of like the supervillain who clearly looks like he's in good shape because he's in this skin tight uniform, huffing and puffing as he's trying to get away very slowly. I think that cracks me up.
So, and that brings us really to the end of the issue. The telethon is saved thanks to the Super Friends. Once again, the city is saved thanks to. And a really nice close.
Yeah, I like it. They're all sitting there all together, all of them, Wendy, Marvin, Wonder Dog, and the five Super Friends. It looks great. And they said they talk about how much money they raised, and there's one other Greenback we got, but he's in jail. And you could just hear that sort of Hanna-Barbera music sting at the end. It's just a great, wonderful little conclusion.
Yeah. Totally.
Completely. Yeah. So now we finally have after the last issue too, we finally have a letters page. I should mention that there is another very negative review by someone named Bill Thien who says Super Friends, to put it bluntly, stinks. You know, all credit to ENB for posting these negative reviews. I mean, it seems very honest of him to do that. I don't know why some of these comic fans seem so angry about the Super Friends. I mean, it's kind of like you guys don't have to buy this book. You can just not buy it and spend your 35 cents somewhere else. So I don't get that. But there is another letter worth mentioning, and this time it is a positive review by someone named Colleen Doran. And I have to wonder if that is the Colleen Doran. I don't know. I reached out to her on Twitter, but I have not heard back from her at the time of this recording. But it's always fun when you see a potentially future comics pro name in a letters page. That's very exciting.
Yeah, and I thought that the letter itself was very complimentary.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that was really interesting. And they're talking primarily about, by and large, she was talking about issues one and two, but when, you know, the guy's talking about the super foes and what a ridiculous, like, I love the super foes. What are you talking about, man? Those are fantastic characters.
Yeah.
But I love the, I really enjoyed this issue, and I thought it was great for ENB to really sort of post these letters, because it was a really nice diversity of opinions here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, he could have just posted all positive stuff, but he was, you know, a very fair-minded guy, so I appreciate that. Again, I don't know why people act like they have to buy this book when they don't. You could just not buy it. Speaking of buying it, I do own this comic, the actual original copy. I own it in a two-pack, one of those legendary comic packs that DC and Marvel used to make, and I guess other companies made too. Now, most of them typically were three packs. This one's a two-pack, and it says DC Superstars for only 69 cents, and you got two comics at 35 cents each, so you were saving one whole penny. I don't exactly understand the motivation there. I don't really think that that's really much of a sales driver to save one penny. But on the header, you've got Superman and Batman, and it says DC Superstars. So this book is Super Friends number 5, and the flip book on the other side was Isis number 5. So obviously they were sticking with the theme, which was the DC TV comic book series, and I really appreciate that. I bought this off of eBay many years ago. I'll never open it because I don't need to. I just enjoy owning these comic packs.
That's awesome, man. Isis and Shazam, all that stuff really were the Isis, Shazam, Super Friends, Batman, Wonder Woman, you know, all that stuff really. And even for a while, the Aquaman cartoon when it was on in reruns, or all that stuff really helped make me a DC Comics fan as a kid, you know. Marvel was always like a little bit more adult and sophisticated, but mm-hmm. from ages of like 5 to 10, man, you could not tear me away from my superpowers figures. You know? You couldn't tear me away from like anything that had to do with Superman or Batman, or like I would listen to the radio shows where Superman and Batman would team up. You know, like I just absolutely love it. And one of the things that I really like about this issue was that it's light. Like, it's really easy for a casual reader to get into. There are a few things that make it a little bit difficult in, like, I mean, this is over 40 years ago. So there are some things where I wish that if we were to retell the story a little bit more contemporary, that I would do a little bit differently. But by and large, the foundation of the story is so good, you know, and each character, with the exception of, I think, maybe Robin, really gets a tremendous moment to shine. Bruce Wayne gets a moment, Aquaman gets a moment, Wonder Woman gets a moment, Superman gets a moment, Wendy gets a moment, you know, like, I mean, I don't care so much about Marvin, but but by and large, you know, they really did something smart here, which was use the limited amount of real estate they have to give everyone a moment to really shine and show off their abilities. And that's rare. You didn't always get that in the Super Friends cartoon. So it's really nice to see them lean in and do this in the comic.
Yeah, ENB crams a lot into 17 pages when you consider one of those is even a splash page. That's not even a story page. And that leads perfect into the two questions I like to ask every guest in the show. The first one is, I have to ask you, the best friend section. What character do you think fared best here in this story? You said that they all, except Robin, got great moments, but which one do you think fared best?
Well, that's a little tough. I think that ultimately at the end of the day, Batman probably fares best because that's so tough. I think Batman fares the best because I think ultimately he gave the most. He has the contribution out of his own pocket to the charity. So he has actually a story, like, he's related to the main story of the telethon, I think, a little bit more intimately than the other characters. Plus, he has that really nice moment where he throws the characters into the water and then beats Green back at the end with his fist. So ultimately, Batman's probably the best friend in terms of, like, overall screen time. But I got to hand it to Aquaman this issue, man. I think he does, with the exception of getting taken out by money, I think he gets a lot of he gets a lot of love in this issue. So I Batman, but it's not a Batman-centric story. So I think I'm leaning towards Aquaman.
Yeah, I actually, that's what I wrote too, is Aquaman. I think, yeah, Bruce Wayne slash Batman gets a lot to do. They don't really explicitly say it, but I assume that Batman doesn't escape from captivity because he wants to lead the other super friends to Greenback's hideout, because obviously being Batman, he could easily escape some ropes tying to a chair. But yeah, I went with Aquaman simply because of that one page where he just gets to be like the sort of, big brawler that I like Aquaman to be sometimes. And so I just like that. He smashes in, beats up a bunch of guys, throws one guy into two other guys. Like, he just gets that sort of one page all to himself, which I really enjoyed. So I gave him the best friend trophy this time around. So, and the other question I have to ask you is, of course, villain roundup, where we ask, would this villain of ENB's really deserve to go on into, say, like the greater DCU? And I think we know the answer to that, but I'm kind of curious as to what you might think about Greenback.
I don't know how much you are into it, but I have been, over the last year, accumulating all the non-canon DC Comics characters.
I noticed that. I know you've been doing that, yes.
From everyone who has not been part of the main DCU. So, like, Alexander Knox from, like, Batman 89 movie, Gus Gorman from Superman 3, Mal Havoc from the Super Friends, you know, all the weird characters that like Simon the Pieman from the Batman Filmation show. So this is something that is very near and dear to my heart, is these characters that don't really have this opportunity to shine in the main DCU. My answer is, I think Greenback absolutely belongs in the mainstream DCU,
and wow,
he falls right above a character like Condiment King.
He's above Condiment King, that's for sure. I mean, that's a low bar, David, but I agree with that.
Yeah, so I think that there's but I agree. I think that if we were – so you have a background in art and I have a background in writing. So if we were to redesign I know, I follow you. I know you graduated the Kubert School.
I didn't say it, everybody. David said it. I didn't get it in.
I tried to. But if you and I were to redesign this character, so I think we talked about how we would give his henchmen their own I would call it Greenback in the Denominations, but that makes it sound like a doo-wop band. But if you were to redesign Greenback, obviously his hench people would all have their own, like you'd have 5 cent or Deuce or $2 bill or whatever. How would you redesign Greenback's costume to make it more telling of today, of the modern era we live in?
Well, I don't know if I would bother to make it modern, but I would probably put him in like a top to bottom bodysuit with no mask, like give him, just paint him all in green. I think he would almost look like that bouncer character, that Batman villain that was just in the red bodysuit. There was, to me, it's like, if you're going to make him, call him Greenback, make him actually look like a dollar bill or make him look like some form of currency. He doesn't really look like that. He just has a bunch of dollar signs on his uniform. So I would probably streamline him a bit and make him like look like a $100 bill or something. Probably hard to draw from panel to panel, but I'm not worried about that.
I would go sort of with what you're saying. I would probably do two-tone, like the way a dollar is. So, and then I would give him a dollar sign on his face, sort of like the question.
Right, right. There you go.
And then I would probably take his money gun, and just build them as gauntlets on his arms.
There you go. Okay, I can see that.
And then give a bandolier of those weird dollar signs. Instead of a belt, a bandolier, so he looks kind of like, I don't know, kind of like Hawkeye or whatever. He just throws them off like shriunkins.
That'd be cool. All right, we'll go with that. All right. I was ready to say Greenback really doesn't deserve to move on, but a redesign might be worth it.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, man. A nice redesign, I think, could really do it. I mean, I think that – I think what's interesting is that he does not have – and I'm disappointed because I think you're right I do think they could have leaned in a little bit more. His helicopter doesn't look like a dollar sign.
Right, right, right. It's just a helicopter, right.
It's just a helicopter. So I feel like this guy is a low-budget
Well, he was hoping to steal a bunch of money, so I mean, maybe he was going to upgrade at this point.
But yeah, I mean, so for my money, didn't mean to say.
Well done.
If you took the time to give him something like in a way, like Richie Rich, like give him like a dog, like Dollar, you know, like give him like a dollar helicopter, a ship that is a floating dollar sign, you know, I think you could really have a lot of fun with it. Just lean into how ludicrous it is.
Maybe so. Maybe I was a little too unfair to Greenback. I have a bad relationship with money. Maybe that's coloring it.
Well, so. better than, but you would rank him higher than Condiment King.
Absolutely. Yes, would.
Where would you rank him in relation to like Space Taxi?
Oh, way below Space Taxi.
Space Cab, rather.
I love Space Cab. I love Space Cabby. Yeah, way below Space Cab. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, all right. So, well, that is going to do it for Telethon Treachery, Super Friends number 5. David, thank you so much for joining me here at the Hall of Justice. This was a blast.
Thank you so much for having me, Rob. It was absolutely a pleasure.
All right. Well, tell people where they can find you on the internet.
You can find me at davidgallagher.com. I'm also on Facebook at David Gallagher Writer. That's all one word. And then on Twitter at David Gallagher. And then I have a brand new book out, Only Living Girl, Volume 2. I have a brand new book out, Only Living Girl, Volume 2, Beneath the Unseen City, which is, damn it, sirens.
I think the cops are chasing Greenback right now.
I know. I have a brand new book out, Only Living Girl, Volume 2, Beneath the Unseen City. It's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever you can find comic books these days.
Very cool. Again, thank you so much for joining me. It was a blast to finally get a chance to podcast with you after you and I have been talking for a long time over the internets, but it was great to finally sit and record with you. So thanks, everybody, for listening. I want you to stay tuned for these commercial messages, and when I come back, I'm going to do some listener feedback.
From David Gallagher and Steve Ellis, the award-winning team that brought you The Only Living Boy, comes this thrilling new action-adventure series, The Only Living Girl.
Hi, my name is Andra. People call me Z. I was a normal girl. I loved science, my bear, and my dad. One day, tragedy struck. But that wasn't the end of my story. I awoke in a patchwork world filled with mermaid warriors, insect princesses, robots. A world created by my dad, who had become a mad scientist. Now I'm stuck in a world that doesn't trust me, in a conflict with my father's creations. Luckily, I still have my friend Eric and my bear. I am the only living girl.
The Only Living Girl, Volume 1, The Island at the Edge of Infinity, is available now in both hardcover and paperback from Papercuts.
Ever watch kids play with Weebles? It's really something. Hey, hey, look at me and Weeble. Me and Weeble all around. One day, kids pretend they're flying into Weeble Airport. Next day, they play around the Weeble Cottage. Or if it's real nice, they go out to the Weeble Marina and go fishing. Hey, hey, look at me and Weeble. The Weebles wobble, but they don't fall down. Romper Room makes Weeble toys.
And we're back with the part of the show I call Super Fans, where I read the feedback from the website, FireAndWaterPodcast.com, and any iTunes reviews. Unfortunately, we don't have any new iTunes reviews. I really would appreciate it. It would help get the show noticed if you could go to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star review for All Mankind. And I promise I will read any review in full here on the show. So anyway, let's get right to the comments on the website. First up is my pal Sean Myers, who of course was on the show in the first two episodes. He says, a great episode covering a great story. I loved hearing Chris's story about shopping for comics for himself and his friend. How great. We all know that Riddler can't commit a crime without sending a riddle clue to tip his hand, but what a great idea to have him not be able to send a riddle clue without committing a crime to back it up. The Glorious ENB does it again. Yes, absolutely. Thank you for using Glorious ENB. Thank you, Sean. Little Russell Bourbon says, great review and discussion as always. This issue holds an odd place in my heart because for some reason I was not able to find it on the newsstands during its initial printing. For many years, my collection was missing this issue. Then when I was in high school, I finally ordered it from one of those comic book for sale ads that ran in all books for so many years. I got this issue and at about the time the series ended and was very disappointed that Aquaman only appeared in 3 panels in the whole book. After waiting all those years to eventually get such little Aqua content was heartbreaking. And that is why Super Friends number 4 is simultaneously my most loved and also least loved issue of Super Friends. Sorry to hear that, Russell. Yeah, there's a whole show to be done about like ordering comic via the mail to complete collections. I did that too. I completed my JLA collection that way in an era before the internet when having to order the stuff was a lot more difficult. It was kind of – you really had to put a lot of effort into it. Anyway, thank you for writing. Matt Sirois says, it's amazing how much story got packed into a comic book then. They don't have nearly as much in a year's worth of a title these days. I love how the Riddler stayed true to character and was compelled to include clues to his own nefarious plans despite his meaning to lead the heroes to skyrocket. I can just picture him sitting in his hideout, racking his brain to come up with riddles that would expose both his and Skyrocket's plans. Or maybe he just gave up and picked a crime that would match his riddle. The Riddler, frustrated. I guess I'm going to have to resort to dog napping. I've never been holding back my opinion on the great Wendy Marvin versus Wonder Twins debate. I prefer the Wonder Twins, even though the insufferable Gleek causes more trouble than he is worth. However, it's not Wendy or Marvin I find I dislike. It's the incredibly goofy episodes they appeared in. The first season of Super Friends seemed to be aimed at the kindergarten age audience. The later seasons matured things a bit, going for more of a grade school audience. Just my opinion, Super Friends forever. Yeah, I agree with that, Matt. I think the first season of Super Friends is very gentle, and that was the Wendy and Marvin season. And so, yeah, maybe they suffer from just being in shows that aren't quite as good. Not that the Wonder Twins were in Challenge of the Super Friends, but they were sort of that era where things just got a little more kind of intense. As you said, a little more mature, I guess. And so, yeah, they benefit from that. But so I see your point. Ito Boznar says, just for the record, I have to disagree with Gotham's Mansion. I like the World Beater story in issue number 3 better than this one. Otherwise, though, I yet again enjoyed the show. Another great guest, another great appearance by Mr. Franklin, and an enjoyable conversation. FAM is fast becoming one of my favorite shows on the network right after the Treasury and Digest cast. I wonder what the common denominator is in all those shows. Gotham's Mansion says, thanks for the show, guys. A lot of fun to listen to on a depressing Monday workday. I may be misguided by childhood nostalgia. I think we all are. But I love this issue. I first became a Batman fan watching reruns of the Adam West show and was blown away by Frank Gorshin's portrayal of the Riddler. This was not only the first Super Friends issue I bought off the spinner rack, but it was also my first Riddler comic. The idea of Riddler using his clues to frame someone else, but then still having to commit the crime himself was brilliant. In spite of my love for TV Riddler, I have found many of his comic appearances from the Bronze Age to be disappointing. I feel ENB really captured the fun in a difficult-to-write character. Too bad Birdwell didn't come up with this story in time for it to be adapted into an episode of the 1966 Batman show. Gorshin would have been great in this plotline. Also, as a dog fan, I enjoyed Robin's interaction with the dogs. This was good fun for a 5-year-old me. I should probably mention that one of my gateway drugs was Superheroes vs. Super Gorillas, which I bought for Batman and then became fans of Superman and Flash after reading their adventures in it. I was thrilled to get a comic of both Batman and Superman appearing together. Yeah, that bit with Superman singing is a bit weird, but no weirder than that 60s Jimmy Olsen with the Krypton Crawl dance that someone bought me for my birthday. April 1977 cover dates were big for me. In addition to my first Super Friends and Riddler comics, this one, I got my first Brave and the Bold, first Apero, first proper Joker comic, Batman 286, although I had the awful baseball issue and I may have had stacked cards by this point, and my first 3 Marvels in a 3-pack. This was another gateway drug to Spider-Man and Hulk fandom. Yeah, big month for you, Gothos. April 77. I think we all have moments like that where there's like a bunch of really great comics all at once. Over on my Mountain Comic show, I talk about the release dates, and I think like August of 1981, I've done like 7 books from that month on the show already because that was just a big, big month. Chris Franklin, of course, from our network and appeared on that very episode, says, fun show. Robin's line to Wonder Woman reminded me of when Jason Todd met Wonder Woman at Superman Annual number 11 for The Man Who Has Everything. Think clean thoughts, Strum. Nice to hear another Chris on the show. I like the way you think. And yes, if Comic Marvin was on the TV series, this Chris wouldn't hate him. Not only do I not have to hear the voice, I love Frank Welker besides this, folks, but he's not as arrogantly stupid as his Toon counterpart. That is true. That is very true. The Marvin in the comic I always like more than the Marvin on the show, even though, like I said, I still prefer Marvin and Wendy to the Wonder Twins. Martin Gray from the Too Dangerous for a Girl blog says, cheers for another lovely episode with a great guest in Chris. I love his cheery voice, and then he's vintage like me. The same could be said for the other Chris. This issue appeared before I could get Super Friends in the UK, so I've not read it, but it sounds fun. Every issue of The Power Company had me singing, Sky Rockets in Flight, Afternoon Delight. I like that character and her pals. In the intro to the cartoon, what the heck does created from the cosmic legends of the universe actually mean? It sounds very Grant Morrison. And yes, Al Schroeder III, the man who gave DC the idea for Superman number 330, with Clark Kent's subliminal super hypnosis convincing people he looked nothing like the Man of Steel. Hold your head high. I didn't know that that was the same guy who did that, who came up with that horrendous idea, although, you know, DC accepted it, so it's really more their fault than Al's fault. But yeah, I don't know why Al hated Super Friends so much. Chris Franklin follows up with the Cosmic Legends bit. He says, I grew up with the show, Martin, and I've always wondered what the heck created from the Cosmic Legends of the Universe means. It just sounds good with Ted Knight, not that one, narrating it. Yeah, my two cents is the Cosmic Legends line, if I really want to like examine it, which I do, I always assume that it sort of meant kind of like heroes from space, heroes from the streets, heroes from the sea, and heroes from kind of like mythology. I mean, I know that's really stretching it, but it is kind of like Aquaman is, it's sort of like Elementals a little bit. I get it. It doesn't really track, but that's sort of in my mind where it was. It was like Wonder Woman is kind of earth, and Aquaman is sea, and Superman is the air, and Batman is the street. I don't know. Don't blame me. I didn't write it. Gold Dragon 71 says, really enjoyed this latest installment. Skyrocket's look was interesting to me, so I attempted to recreate it in my DC Universe Online game. I like that Aquaman gets his share of the action in this series. Recently, in the DC Universe community, a question had come up as to who the next big three were after Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. My response was, I'd say Aquaman, Flash, and Green Lantern, largely because, until Challenge at least, Super Friends always opened with Aquaman as one of the big four. Granted, Super Friends is historically regarded as having hurt Aquaman's reputation more than it helped him, but it still stands that he was a central member and not just an occasional visitor. Anyway, I'm looking forward to the next episode. Yeah, I agree, Gold Dragon. I know that it has become kind of a thing that Super Friends hurt Aquaman's rep more than it helped him, but I just don't really buy that. I think that mostly he benefited from just being so ubiquitous on television and being put on a level with Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. I ultimately think that helped him. And now, of course, Aquaman doesn't have an image problem, but I don't know. I think, you know, for some people, the you know, that gif of him riding the fish with the reins is always kind of what people's mind. But ultimately, I still get excited when I see that great Alex Toth drawing and those open credits come up. And it's Superman and Wonder Woman, Batman, and then Aquaman. To me, it's, you know, that's where he belongs. So. And then finally, Jason Pope says, great episode. Being a child of the 70s and 80s, I too immediately thought of the song Midnight at the Oasis when the song about the Andes was brought up. Skyrockets in Flight, Afternoon Delight, is an excellent point as well that I didn't think of. But yes, 10 points to Gryffindor. Love seeing the new letters page in the back of this issue, and the truth and bravery to publish the negative letter was a hoot. Thinking about the merch kind segment and seeing the package photo on your link to this episode, I wasn't thinking of it so much as a slap in Aquaman's face that he was missing from the Super Friends logo. I was immediately struck with the thought that it was kind of cute and clever that Aquaman had dove from the Super Friends logo up top and was now swimming below in the packaging near the swim gear. It seemed to be more like his missing from the logo was spotlighting Aquaman for this product because he's clearly missing from the logo with negative space being there. However, Aquaman should have been shown a bit larger. I like that idea, Jason. You're like telling a story with the packaging. I think you're probably being a little generous, probably as generous as I was with the Cosmic Legends thing a second ago. But at the same time, it kind of tracks. I think you might get awarded a no prize for that. I can kind of buy that. And it, again, I mentioned in that segment that there were other products that Aquaman has removed from the logo for, which just never made any sense to me. He doesn't have to be on the product. Why would they even make a Super Friends logo without Aquaman? It just made no sense to me. But I like your idea of telling sort of a story with that package. So, yeah, 10 points to Gryffindor. So that's going to do it for the feedback from the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. I really appreciate everybody leaving comments. I love reading the comments as they roll in for the episodes, and I promise we will keep up with them here on For All Mankind. So that's going to do it for this episode of the show. Of course, if you want to support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, go to patreon.com/FWPodcasts, and there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name-checked on a show of your choice. So if you really love For All Mankind, go over to patreon.com/FWPodcasts and leave us an ongoing pledge. Thank you very much. Of course, we're always talking super friends over on For All Mankind, For All Mankind SF over on Twitter. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, and on Spotify. So that is going to do it for this month. Big thanks to David Gallagher for stopping by. It was great to finally get a chance to do a podcast with him ever after having talked to him online for many years now. That was super fun. So that's going to do it. Thanks for listening to For All Mankind. Join us next episode when we look at Superfriends number 6, The Menace of the Menagerie Man.
An FWTV podcast.